Chapter 53. Holden. Hi, Mom. We're on Luna. The light delay from Luna was less than 6 seconds for a round trip, but it was enough to add an awkward pause before each response. Mother Elise stared out at him from his hotel room's video screen for 5 long heartbeats. Then her face lit up. Jimmy, are you coming down? She meant down the well. Coming home. Holden felt an ache to do exactly that. It had been years since he'd been to the farm in Montana that his parents owned. But this time, he had Naomi with him, and Belters didn't go to Earth. No, Mom, not this time. But I want all of you to come meet me up here. The shuttle ride is my treat, and UN Undersecretary Avasarala is hosting, so the accommodations are pretty posh. When there was comm lag, it was difficult not to ramble on. The other person never sent the subtle physical cues that signaled it was their turn to talk. Holden forced himself to stop babbling and wait for a reply. Elise stared at the screen, waiting out the lag. Holden could see how much she'd aged in the years since his last trip home. Her dark brown, almost black hair was streaked with gray, and the laugh lines around her eyes and mouth had deepened. After 5 seconds, she waved a hand at the screen in a dismissive gesture. Oh, Tom will never ride a shuttle to Luna. You know that. He hates microgravity. Just come down and see us here. We'll throw a party. You can bring your friends here. Holden smiled at her. Mom, I need you guys to come up here because I have someone I want you to meet. Remember the woman? Naomi Nagata? The one I told you about? I told you I've been seeing her. I think it might be more than that. In fact, I'm kind of sure about it now. And now we'll be on Luna while a whole lot of political bullshit gets straightened out. I really want you guys to come up, see me, meet Naomi. It was almost too subtle to catch, the way his mother flinched 5 seconds later. She covered it with a big smile. More than that? What does that mean? Like getting married? I always thought you'd want kids of your own someday. She trailed off, maintaining an uncomfortably stiff smile. Mom, Holden said, Earthers and Belters can have kids just fine. We're not a different species. Sure, she said a few seconds later, nodding too quickly. But if you have children out there... She stopped, her smile fading a bit. Then there'll be Belters, Holden said. Yeah, you guys are just going to have to be okay with that. After 5 seconds, she nodded, again too quickly. Then I guess we better come up and meet this woman you're willing to leave Earth behind for. She must be very special. Yeah, Holden said. She is. Elise shifted uncomfortably for a second. Then her smile came back, far less forced. I'll get Tom on that shuttle if I have to drag him by the hair. I love you, Mom, Holden said. His parents had spent their whole lives on Earth. The only Outer Planets types they knew were the caricature villains that showed up on bad entertainment feeds. He didn't hold their ingrained prejudices against them because he knew that meeting Naomi would be the cure for it. A few days spent in her company, and they wouldn't be able to help falling in love with her. Oh, one last thing. That data I sent you a while back? Hang on to that for me. Keep it quiet, but keep it. Depending on how things fall out over the next couple of months, I may need it. My parents are racists, Holden said to Naomi later that night. She lay curled against his side, her face against his ear, one long brown leg thrown across his hips. Okay, she whispered. The hotel suite Avasarala had provided for them was luxurious to the point of opulence. The mattress was so soft that in the lunar gravity it was like floating on a cloud. The air recycling system pumped in subtle scents handcrafted by the hotel's in-house perfumer. That night's selection was called Windblown Grass. It didn't exactly smell like grass to Holden, but it was nice. Just a hint of earthiness to it. Holden had a suspicion that all perfumes were named randomly anyway. He also suspected that the hotel ran the oxygen just a little higher than normal. He felt a little too good. "They're worried our babies will be belters," he said.
"No babies," Naomi whispered.
But before Holden could ask what she meant, she was snoring in his ear. The next day, he woke before Naomi, dressed in the best suit he owned, and headed out into the station. There was one last thing he had to do before he could call this whole bloody affair truly over. He had to see Jules Mao. Avasarala had told him that Mao was one of several dozen high-ranking politicians, generals, and corporate leaders rounded up in the massive arrests following Io. He was the only one Avasarala was going to see personally. And since they'd caught him on his L5 station, frantically trying to get on a fast ship to the outer planets, she'd just had him brought to her on Luna. That day was the day of their meeting. He'd asked Avasarala if he could be there, expecting a no. Instead, she laughed a good long time and said, "Holden, there is literally nothing I can think of that will be more humiliating to that man than having you watch me dismantle him. Fuck yes, you can come." So Holden hurried out of the hotel and onto the streets of Lovell City. A quick pedicab ride got him to the tube station, and a 20-minute tube ride took him to the New Hague United Nations complex. A perky young page was waiting for him when he arrived, and he was escorted efficiently through the complex's twisty maze of corridors to a door marked Conference Room 34. "You can wait inside, sir," the perky page chirped at him. "No, you know," Holden said, clapping the boy on the shoulder. "I think I'll wait out here." The page dipped his head slightly and bustled off down the corridor, already looking at his hand terminal for whatever his next task was. Holden leaned against the corridor wall and waited. In the low gravity, standing was hardly any more effort than sitting, and he really wanted to see Mao perp-walked down the hallway to his meeting. His terminal buzzed, and he got a short text message from Avasarala. It said, "On our way." Less than 5 minutes later, Jules Pierre Mao climbed off an elevator into the corridor, flanked by two of the largest military police officers Holden had ever seen. Mao had his hands cuffed in front of him. Even wearing a prisoner's jumpsuit, hands in restraints, and with armed guards escorting him, he managed to look arrogant and in control. As they approached, Holden stood up straight and stepped in their way. One of the MPs yanked on Mao's arm to stop him and gave Holden a subtle nod. It seemed to say, "I'm down for whatever with this guy." Holden had a sense that if he yanked a pistol out of his pants and shot Mao right there in the corridor, the two MPs would discover they had both been struck with blindness at the same moment and failed to see anything. But he didn't want to shoot Mao. He wanted what he always seemed to want in these situations. He wanted to know why. Was it worth it? Even though they were the same height, Mao managed to frown down at him. "You are..." "Oh, come on," Holden said with a grin. "You know me. I'm James Holden. I helped bring down your pals at Protogen, and now I'm about to finish that job with you. I'm also the one that found your daughter after the protomolecule had killed her. So I'll ask again. Was it worth it?" Mao didn't reply. "A dead daughter? A company in ruins? Millions of people slaughtered? A solar system that will probably never have peaceful stability again. Was it worth it?" "Why are you here?" Mao finally asked. He looked smaller when he said it. He wouldn't make eye contact. "I was there in the room when Dresden got his, and I'm the man who killed your pet admiral. I just feel like there's this wonderful symmetry in being there when you get yours." "Anthony Dresden," Mao said, "was shot in the head 3 times, execution style.
Is that what passes for justice with you?
Holden laughed.
Oh, I doubt Christian Avasarala is going to shoot you in the face. Do you think what's coming will be better?
Mao didn't reply, and Holden looked at the MP and gestured toward the conference room door. They almost looked disappointed as they pushed Mao into the room and attached his restraints to a chair.
We'll be waiting out here, sir, if you need us, the larger of the two MPs said.
They took up flanking positions next to the door.
Holden went into the conference room and took a chair, but he didn't say anything else to Mao.
A few moments later, Avasarala shuffled into the room, talking on her hand terminal.
I don't give a fuck whose birthday it is. You make this happen before my meeting is over, or I'll have your nuts as paperweights.
She paused as the person on the other end said something. She grinned at Mao and said,
Well, go fast, because I have a feeling my meeting will be short. Good talking to you.
She sank into a chair directly across the table from Mao. She didn't look at Holden or acknowledge him at all. He suspected that the record would never reflect his presence in the room. Avasarala put her terminal on the tabletop and leaned back in her chair. She didn't speak for several tense seconds. When she did, it was to Holden. She still didn't look at him.
You've gotten paid for hauling me back here?
Payment's cleared, Holden said.
That's good. I wanted to ask you about a longer-term contract. It would be civilian, of course, but...
Mao cleared his throat. Avasarala smiled at him.
I know you're there. I'll be right with you.
I've already got a contract, Holden said. We're escorting the first reconstruction flotilla to Ganymede. And after that, I'm thinking we'll probably be able to get another escort gig from there. Still a lot of people relocating who'd rather not get stopped by pirates along the way.
You're sure?
Mao's face was white with humiliation. Holden let himself enjoy it.
I've just gotten done working for a government, Holden said. I didn't wear it well.
Oh, please. You worked for the OPA. That's not a government. It's a rugby scrum with a currency. Yes, Jules, what is it? You need to go to the potty?
This is beneath you, Mao said. I didn't come here to be insulted.
Avasarala's smile was incandescent.
You're sure about that? Let me ask, do you remember what I said the first time we met? You asked me to tell you about any involvement I might have had with the protomolecule project run by Protogen.
No, Avasarala replied. I mean, yes, I did ask that. But that's not the part that you should be caring about right now.
You lied to me. Your involvement with weaponizing the Protogen project is fully exposed, and that question is like asking what color Tuesday was. It's meaningless.
Let's get down to brass tacks, Mao said.
No, Avasarala interrupted. The part you should be caring about is what I said just before you left. Do you remember that?
He looked blankly up at her.
I didn't think so. I told you that if I found out later you'd hidden something from me, I wouldn't take it well.
Your exact words, Mao said with a mocking grin, were, I am not someone you want to fuck with.
So you do remember, she said,
not a hint of humor in her tone.
Good. This is where you get to find out what that means.
I have additional information that could be of benefit.
Shut the fuck up.
Avasarala said, real anger creeping into her voice for the first time.
Next time I hear your voice, I have those two big MPs in the hallway hold you down and beat you with a fucking chair. Do you understand me?
Mao didn't reply, which showed that he did.
You don't have any idea what you've cost me, she said. I'm being promoted. The Economic Planning Council? I run it now. The Public Health Service? I never had to worry about it because that was Ehrenreich's pain in the ass. It's mine now. The Committee on Financial Regulation? Mine. You fucked up my calendar for the next 2 decades. This is not a negotiation, Avasarala continued. This is me gloating. I'm going to drop you into a hole so deep, even your wife will forget you ever existed.
I'm going to use Aaron Wright's old position to dismantle everything you ever built piece by piece and scatter it to the winds. I'll make sure you get to watch it happening. The one thing your hole will have is 24-hour news. And since you and I will never meet again, I want to make sure my name is on your mind every time I destroy something else you left behind. I am going to erase you.
Mao stared back defiantly, but Holden could see it was just a shell. Avasarala had known exactly where to hit him, because men like him lived for their legacy. They saw themselves as the architects of the future. What Avasarala was promising was worse than death. Mao shot a quick look at Holden, and it seemed to say, "I'll take those three shots to the head now, please." Holden smiled at him.